morning, everyone. Awake and ready? Awake and ready? Great. So lovely to be here. All of us bringing our part of God to share and make the light grow stronger. Let us pray, O Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, Beloved Jesus Christ, Blessed Master, Dearest Mother, Saints and Sages of all religions, I bow to all of you. Free my life from all obstacles, and give me physical, mental, and spiritual development. Make my mind thy temple. Make my heart thy altar. Make my love thy home. Be thou the only King, reigning on the throne of my consciousness. The chant that we were singing, Shri Ram, Jai Ram, Jai Jai Ram, Om, is something that's come to us from beloved Swami Ramdas. It's an ancient chant and was handed down to him by his guru and was told simply, chant this name repeatedly again and again, and you will begin to experience the bliss of God. As you feel that bliss, you will feel an inner direction unfold inside of you, and it will take you all the way to perfect realization of God. Such a simple thing to be able to do, just to chant that chant again and again. And as you sing it, and you sing it out loud, you begin to feel a vibration inside of your heart center, and it begins to resonate with that name. It creates a kind of a nectar, a kind of sweetness that begins to happen. And then even as you quit chanting it on the outside and you're just mentally chanting it, you feel that same current of bliss, that same current of upliftment. And so Papa took those words and he began to put them into practice. And he felt the sweetness of the name. He felt it was like sweet like candy, he would say. And he wanted more and more and more of it. And so he was chanting continuously this name. And gradually it transformed him and it took him on a great journey in the outer sense. He was already feeling the bliss of God within himself. But he said that God wanted to take him out into this world and demonstrate that the world is God. It's so apt, as us all, we can sit in meditation, in prayer. We feel such great peace, and then we open these eyes and we enter out into this world, and suddenly the body is calling to us, different people rub us the wrong way, and suddenly we're completely divorced from that feeling of God consciousness. And so to perfect and purify the mind to the extent that we can be in any circumstance at any time and still feel the bliss and upliftment of God is really an accomplishment. So God took Papa out and he didn't take any money with him. He just had one extra piece of clothing. He had his dentures with him and that was about it. And out he went and into the world and chanting this name, and felt that God would be like the most tender, loving mother who would take care of him at every turn, that he would fast unless given food, that he would not sleep unless he was feeling the bliss of God. And even then, sometimes he didn't allow himself to go into sleep. He just kept chanting this. And in situation after situation, he would find that there would be different personalities who would come forward who might ordinarily have disturbed him. But because he was continuously chanting this chant and was not having any regard for what anybody else thought about him. He was walking through a small town, and somebody looked at him and said to their friend, "Look at that fellow, he's half cracked." You know, so, you know, are you self-conscious about it? What does Papa do? He turns around, he says, "Sir," and he pronouns to him, "Ram Dass is not half cracked, he's fully cracked." He was just in this state of inebriation with God, and he could maintain it continuously. And then he went to the great Ramana Maharshi, and who just resided on a couch and laid there, but he would give people a look, and that look could transform you. And so Papa sat for about 5 minutes, and suddenly the Maharshi looked at him, and he felt this transference of this tremendous power of God from this great God-man, Ramana Maharshi, into his own being. Without a word, he got up. He went up into a small cave, been into that cave up on the hill there of Arunachala. And for 20 days, over 20 days, he was just continuously chanting this chant. And when he came out of this cave, he really, truly saw the world as God. His vision had become transformed. He no longer saw it as something out there, but he felt the very same bliss that he had within himself being manifest as this universe that we live in. Can you imagine such a thing? Having that experience. And he saw some fellow walking along on the path there. People walk around the mountain. That's one of their rituals that they do. Sees this fellow. He goes running after him. The person sees around, turns around, sees his mad sadhu running after him. He takes off running in the opposite direction as fast as he can. Papa's faster, catches up with them, and he embraces him, and he says, "You are Ram, you are God, you are God, only God." And then fellow breathes a sigh of relief. "Ah, you are upstairs," he says, "you know, you're not going to attack me, you're not going, it's all right." And he felt that bliss that Papa was feeling. So you see what's possible for us. Our lives may not look exactly like his. We may not be called, and he said very few are called to leave their home. He said, better yet to stay in your home. Better yet to stay in your home and chant and love God. Love God. So this is a poem that Papa wrote. It's called Nectar Drop in Nectar. My God is within and without. Having become all my son of sons, he shines in the face of all things. Sitting on my heart throne, he, my king of kings, permeates my thoughts, feelings, and acts, my senses, my breath, and my life, and reveals through them all. My beloved, beyond compare, as pure wisdom, as all-absorbing love and ecstasy, I exist because of him, am his abode. The abode is also he. We exchange places, and we often lose in each other like nectar drop in nectar. What to call this sweet blessedness? And then he writes, the purpose of life. The purpose of life is to live in the consciousness of the divine and be active in the service of humanity. Really listen to those words. The purpose of life is to live in the consciousness of the divine and be active in the service of humanity. The conflicts in the world have afforded us ample opportunity to shed our selfish ambitions and utilize the energies, both mental and physical, which God has granted us for the relief and rescue of sufferers. True liberation, peace, and bliss can come to the share the sufferers, excuse me, true liberation, peace, and bliss can come to the share of a spiritual aspirant only when he or she combines the inner sadhana, or spiritual practice of remembrance, and meditation with the outer dedication of actions to the divine. Every action performed in an impersonal spirit becomes the worship of God. Such actions are prompted by love, sympathy, and goodwill towards those who are in distress. Unless the heart is softened with the feeling of compassion for those who are stricken with misery and pain, the soul cannot progress on the divine path and reach God. These are not the days for living an easy, luxurious, and inactive life. All personal comforts and petty desires of one's own material advancement and the sense of invidious distinctions and likes and dislikes and all the various weaknesses of human nature that stand for strife and disunion have to be given up, so that life may be offered in its totality to the service of God and in the world. How momentary and ephemeral is the nature of things around us. At the same time, we cannot but realize that there exists a spirit of immortal radiance which death cannot touch and change cannot affect, a spirit of supreme peace, power, and knowledge. Take that in deeply. There is something that is beyond change. There is something that is beyond death. And that cannot be affected. A spirit of supreme peace, power, and knowledge. The message which is ringing in our ears at the present hour is, stand up as heroic soldiers of God and fight in the cause of justice and truth and bring unity, peace, and harmony in the world. Let fear, depression, and hesitation be wiped out of your lives. You are the expressions of the immortal spirit, God. You have assumed a body only for service and sacrifice. Therefore, assert your divinity and fill your life with the rapture of selfless action. Young men and women, you have a great task before you. The future of the world is in your hands. You can create, through a dedicated life of service, a new world in which all people in it can live in mutual friendliness and goodwill. It is in your power to so inspire your life with divine Shakti, or power, that you can dispel the darkness of discord and violence and establish universal love and peace. Spiritual discipline and attainment does not mean to live a life of seclusion, cut off from the world of activity, knowing that you are by nature essentially free from change and death, that you are ever in union with the Absolute. Permit your life to flow like a river to protect and nourish the needy and helpless. May divine grace enlighten your path. May divine power actuate you to great, noble, and selfless deeds. May divine grace fill your hearts with peace, love, and compassion. May divine grace transform your lives into the images of the divine. How perfectly beautiful and true. It can seem to us that the divine goal is very far away. The demands of this world crowd in on top of us. The difficulties and the pain in this body demand their attention. And so with all of these competing aspects to our life, how do we live in the world but not of the world? This is our great task. And it is by touching that transformative, wonderful spirit of God that is within us. It is through that grace that our consciousness is transformed. The ego cannot transcend the ego. Therefore, really, in and of your own self-effort, you could never attain God-realization. It is only through grace. And yet, in order to have grace active in our lives, we must open the door. In some dim history, we closed that door, closed it to our own divinity, closed it to that bliss, because we wanted to have this experience as a human being. We wanted to have this experience in nature, and we just closed that door so that we might have that experience. It's like an actor who so involves himself in a role in order to play out that role that he forgets himself for a period of time. He becomes that character. He becomes the dynamic energies that are written into that play. But when the play is over, he comes back to himself and he remembers, oh yes, I am just an actor who is playing a role. And I see that I am not defined by that role. It's just simply something that I have done. Likewise, when you come into a state of realization, you realize that all the limitations that you've placed on yourself, all the suffering, all the difficulties that you've gone through in life, really have just been a role that you've played. Now you say, but this is real suffering. This is real problems that I have in my life. But if you were to connect with that actor when he was in the play, he would be suffering all the pangs, everything that that character would be going through in the play. The difference is, perhaps, that even while he's in the play, he realizes he is an actor, so he may have all the pain that goes along with that character, and yet he knows that he's an actor acting it. Yogananda talked about being in the movie theater, and up on the screen were these dancing images of light, and they could be very compelling, and there was sound coming out. And I'm sure we've all been in a movie where tears start to come down our eyes, or we're in a very frightened state. We find ourselves holding on to the chair, or any number of emotions. And you think, this is just a play of light on a screen. Why are we having these reactions? It's because we've identified with the characters. We've identified with the action that's going on within that movie, and it's brought out those feelings. In that moment, those tears are real. You wouldn't say you were just acting, but you feel those tears. You feel those emotions coming out. And yet, none of it is real. So then, Yogananda says, turn around away from the screen and look in the opposite direction. And what do you see? You see coming out of the projection booth this bright white light. And he says, that's God in the projection booth. And that he's showing his movie, and we're meant to enjoy it as a movie. And then he humorously adds, so if you go inside and you see God, he's reading a novel of which next movie he's going to produce. And he's busy with that one while he's showing this one. He loves the play. And you say, well, I don't like his play so much. I don't like being here. I don't like having to suffer in this way. The very fact that you're here means that you too enjoy it, or you wouldn't be here. You would take yourself out of it. And it's just simply we like the good aspects. We don't necessarily like the difficult ones. And yet this world is always made up of mixed nature. There is the positive. There is the negative. There is the up, there is the down, there's the inside, there's the outside. It's what makes up the play. If you're writing a play, if you're writing for a movie, a screenplay, you have to write in an antagonist. You have to write in there's some creative tension that goes on within that play, or people would just say, well, it looks like something happening in my home. Why did I pay money for this? I could just go home and enjoy this. And so you have to have this tension in order to have the play. And so once we recognize that, once we turn our vision around and we see that it is just a projection of light, a projection from the infinite that resides within the booth of eternity, and this white light is projecting itself out and then takes on the form of color and sound and action and all the things that make up this creation. Now, is it possible for us to stay in union? That's what yoga means, is union, in union with God, even while we are enjoying the play. Yes, it is how we are meant to live in this world. If you always felt like you never got the instruction booklet about life, and how in the world were you supposed to know what to do when you got thrown into this world, that's it. It's turn the mind within. It's find God there. All the religions of the world, all the great mystical traditions, all say the same thing. Become dispassionate about the things of this world. Turn your mind within. Love God more than you love this world. And you will reestablish yourself with that divine consciousness. This is a tremendous truth. It is a tremendous teaching. And we may hear it and we say, yes, yes, I know, I know. And we say, I know, but we don't experience it, you see. And just knowing it on a mental level is not sufficient. It is not enough. You must go through all of the stages of realization in order to know this. And when you turn yourself over to God, He takes you on that journey. It's the most tremendous, fantastic journey that you've ever been on. And these scriptures that we read, they're actually a blueprint of what we go on inside. They describe outer situations. But they're so cleverly, so beautifully, and so truthfully constructed that they are the instruction booklet of what we have to go through as we go through this transformation from the human to the divine. That is, from a purely human consciousness until we merge this human consciousness into divine consciousness. So Mother is talking here. This is from the Cross and Lotus Journal, this last edition. The meaning of the Mount of Olives. But nevertheless, you pick yourself up again and you carry your cross on the road to Golgotha. And that incidentally means the hill of the skull. You see, we're given these clues along the way that Golgotha means the hill of the skull. That's your skull. This is your path. The Galilee means the circuit. And the circuit is the spine. And so you are rising up into the spine and you are going on to Golgotha. And the Mount of Olives, where Jesus was crucified, is at the point between the eyebrows. The Mount of Olives, the two eyes, is this place of final illumination, the thousand-petal lotus of the brain. And so these two eyes are symbolically represented by the Mount of Olives. They are olive-shaped. And so you are ascending up into this point between the eyebrows, which is called the Christ Center right here. And as you're coming up into Golgotha, the hill of the skull, you come to this point of the Ajna. And this is where all of this happens, right within your own body. Isn't this fantastic, really? And the thousand-petal lotus of the brain. In Revelations, it's the thousand years of peace that happens as these experiences happen. See, it's a slightly different terminology, but it's describing exactly the same internal events that you go through. And when the human ego, the ego of the five senses, is crucified, that is still not the end. The crucifixion of the human ego means you transcend it, you go beyond it. But you are tested along the way because all of these different aspects in your consciousness, in your body, in your being, have been attached to this body for so long. And they resist going this way, up into Golgotha, up into the skull, up into the Mount of Olives, because it's afraid of what this transformation will bring. Now, there's never been a spiritual master who has gone through these experiences and then said, go back, don't do it, it's not worth it. They all say how tremendous this experience is and that there's really no reason to fear. And yet, fear, resistance comes up. It's a natural thing that happens inside. And so that is the mystical crucifixion as this ascending force is rising up the spine. And it meets first here at the heart center, where if you were to hold your two arms outstretched, as you would see in the crucified Christ, this is the horizontal limiting energy of the material world. And so this upward ascending force meets the restrictive horizontal force of this world. And it's at this heart center the first mystical crucifixion happens. And I remember when I had this stone in my heart. And it also is described as the Gordian knot. And just tremendous pressure wanting to come through my heart. Tremendous pressure. It was so painful. I didn't think that I could take it anymore. And I told God, you have to do something here because this is so painful. And suddenly the stone rolled off. The Gordian knot came loose. And this divine love came through my heart so powerfully. This is an actual experience that you can have, you see. And this divine love is different than human love. Human love is always filled with calculation. Well, if you do what I like, then I love you. And if you don't do what I like, then I don't love you. It's conditional in that way. And it keeps these invisible ledger sheets. Anybody who's been married knows this happens. You have this, okay, you've done this for me, and well, you've fallen short over here, and so it all gets calculated. And depending on how the other person is doing, you might like to do something for them, or you might not to. You know, and this is human nature, isn't it? And so if we feel that the bank account is full, fine, we're happy and good. If it starts to get depleted, we get very unhappy. What we don't realize is that we have a source of love inside of us. We all go out into this world, into relationships, to get love from others. What we don't realize is we have this tremendous source of love right in our own hearts. We don't know it. We don't see it. We don't experience it. So we get more and more desperate to get it from others. And oftentimes the more desperate we are to get it, the less we get. Because others feel that desperation and so they start to back away from us. When we go into this world and into relationships, not what we come to get, but what we come to give out of the abundance of our own spirit, it completely and totally changes your life. And now love flows through your heart spontaneously, without limit and without end, because God is love and love is God. They're not different. And this love pours through you. And it's not for any particular reason or even for any particular person. And that's why it can be called impersonal love. Not because it's cold, aloof, but because it's not dependent upon the person. You can just be sitting in your chair or driving or walking someplace, and this love is just pouring through you for no particular reason at all. Because it's just your nature. It's who you are. It's like the rose plant, and you walk up to the rose plant, and you just smell this tremendous fragrance coming out. It's not trying to please you. It's just being what it is. And it's part of its nature to exude this wonderful fragrance. And this is part of who you are now. And you feel this love. You are also the recipient, but you don't hold it and keep it for yourself. You let it flow out from you. And it inspires you to do actions. And not for a reward. Not because you're going to get something for it. The reward is in the action itself, because love and bliss is now flowing through you and expressing itself through you. Now, if somebody appreciates and enjoys what you do, it just adds joy to your joy. If they don't know that you've done something for them, or if they don't appreciate it or anything else, it's nothing to you. Because you've already gotten your reward by this tremendous feeling of God that's flowing through you. And if you please God, and God is in you and you are in God, you see, you don't need anything else than that. And God will provide for you. He will take you through this life. He will guide you. He will direct you in everything that you do. Your life has changed to such an extent that this is true. And you are free now, because when we live in a human consciousness, we always feel that we're circumscribed. We've got a kind of self-made prison around us. And it is an isolated one. When you are in union with God, those boundaries dissolve. They expand. They grow out into great beauty. And so we enter into this great journey, into this great unfoldment. And it's the most challenging, the most difficult, and the most worthwhile excursion you'll ever go on. And unlike many trips that we take where we go and we're gone for a few weeks and we may have a very fine time of it, but we come back and we're fundamentally the same person. This will change you, and in all good ways. But you see, you don't absolutely know that before you go through it. So it does feel risky. It does feel like, what will happen to me? Who will I become? And we don't realize that there's absolutely nothing to fear in any of this. It is the end of suffering. It is the end of our pain. And so the risen Christ has come, but he still must ascend into the heaven of his own being. So this sepulcher, this rock has rolled away. This divine love has come. And who's the first one who meets Jesus upon the path? It's Mary. Now, it was many, many years later that Mary Magdalene was identified as this woman of sin. She may or may not have been. But Mary represents feeling. It's the feeling nature. And it's when feeling nature has been purified from sensuality and is now your feeling is a highly tuned instrument of intuition. And so it is Mary who is walking in service to the Christ. She's gone there to do something for this crucified Christ. And she meets the Christ upon the path. And she doesn't recognize him at first. And then suddenly he calls out to her. And she awakens to that this is the Christ. Her very own Christ within her very own being. But he says, do not touch me yet. You see, feeling nature has not been yet completely purified. And if we enter too much back into the sensual world, we'll succumb to it. We'll get drawn back into it and we'll lose the Christ consciousness that we've been attaining. So we must keep this purified state going. We must keep our full attention upon God. We must surrender to him. Now, you still live in a body, so you still eat food. You still have things that touch the senses. But when you feel this compulsion for some kind of sensory experience, you definitely don't go there. You keep yourself in that still state of Christ consciousness. When you do that, then you are continue on in this ascension. Now, the ascension happens right within your own being. So you rise up from the heart center and you go to the throat center. And at the throat center you have further experience. And this is the electrical body or the astral body. You've gone out of the physical and you've gone into the electrical body. It's a more subtle sense. And that happens at the throat center. And for years I felt that I had a hard stone in my throat. And finally this Christ seed rose up above the throat center. You say it happens in 3 days, so it says in the Bible, but it doesn't mean 3 24-hour days. It means 3 stages that you go through as you go through the physical, the astral, and the causal or the idea body. These are the 3 days or the 3 stages that you go through. And so as you come up to there, you have your own tests that are there. And one of them is speaking the truth. And so many of us are shy about that. These are sacred truths that have been given to us. These are sacred experiences. We live a life of shame. When we look at the story of Adam and Eve, we see what are the consequences of them choosing to go against God's will. They are in fear and they are ashamed. And so fear and shame are very close to what separates us from our innate, pure, divine nature. As we are on this return path, we meet up with fear and shame very powerfully. And we want to hide this away. We don't want the world to know. We don't want other people to ridicule us or make fun of us or misunderstand us. And it's not that we have to go out and say everything to everybody. Jesus himself said, "Do not dangle your pearls before dogs and swine." Don't just take it out and wear it out on your sleeve because people will use it against you. But when you are called upon to speak the truth and you speak only truth, you see, that's the other thing. How many times do we shade the truth and it becomes an untruth or a partial truth? If it's only a partial truth, that means it's a partial untruth. And so we learn to speak the truth only. If we want to know the truth, we must practice these things, you see. And so we find all those places in life where we didn't exactly speak the truth. And we have the courage and we have the faith where we will speak the truth and we only speak the truth. And if it's not the truth, we don't speak at all. And this is a great thing. Master told the story of the man who was sitting under, a great saint who was sitting underneath the tree. And a man approached them and came up to the saint, and he says, listen, he says, these fellows, I stole something, and these fellows are after me, and they're going to really do me bad damage if they find me. I'm going up into the tree. Don't tell them anything. Don't tell them where I am. Tell them I went another direction. So Master said, all right, what do you do? That's an ethical question, huh? What do you do? Do you say, oh no, he went off into another direction, and tell a lie? Master said, sometimes, in order to do a higher good, you may tell an untruth. Now, Swami Ram Dass told the very same story, and he said, no, you would tell the individuals where the fellow was. You would always tell the truth. You would never tell an untruth, no matter the consequences. Interesting, huh? Two highly realized masters, two different answers. I thought it was interesting that neither one of them gave a third option. Don't say anything. Keep mum. Don't tell him he went up the tree. Don't tell him he went elsewhere. And if they do you bodily harm, well, all right, so be it. That's what it is. So you tune yourself into truth, and you always speak the truth. Vow to yourself, from this day forward, you will never speak an untruth. And even if it causes you a little bit of short-term pain to tell the truth, it will really see you in the long run. Because this place of the throat chakra becomes refined, and you not only can speak the truth, you begin to know the truth on a much deeper level. You know about Dharma. Dharma means knowing the right thing to do. The right thing to do. Initially, it comes in the yamas and niyamas of India and the Ten Commandments and all the different rules and regulations given in the Old Testament. But you know, Jesus, he says, all right, he says, that those are fine, but you know what? If you act only with love, that fulfills all the commandments, right there. So you only act with love, you only speak the truth, and as I wrote about recently, love and truth cannot be separate. They cannot be separate. And sometimes people will use facts like weapons. And you've seen it, and maybe we've done it ourselves. You go after somebody, and you will use a fact, and you will try to destroy that person with that fact. There is no love in it. And it's true that it's a fact, but it's not the truth. Because unless you hold that person in their entirety, in their own soul's journey, unless you find that place of compassion within yourself, where you love that person, it can never really be the truth about that person. It's just simply a fact. So love and truth must always go together. And you can have what we call love in a human sense, but it's not based on truth. Sometimes people love somebody, but it's a fantasy who they've conjured to be this person. It's not the truth about them, and therefore it cannot be real love. And so love and truth must always be combined in order to fulfill its true and complete meaning. And it can never be the truth. It can be a fact, but it cannot be truth without love. And I think if you examine it, you'll find that this is absolutely true. And so we speak with love, and we speak with truth only. That's the only reason we use this voice box at all. And if we use it for anything else, we immediately course correct. There is an individual who's saying, he says, you can talk about anybody else's faults as much as you like, as long as it causes you pain. You can say anything about somebody else's faults, as long as it causes you pain. The moment you get the least amount of pleasure out of it, stop right there. Why? Because pain, there's compassion. Isn't it sad that this person acts or behaves or does this in this way? That's a long road to take. It's a long road to take, and it produces a lot of suffering, and it produces a lot of isolation. I'm sad for that person that that's how they choose to act at this time. And it causes you pain, the pain of compassion, the pain of understanding them, and knowing what the consequences, and say, I too, I'm sure that I must have acted like that as well. And I know it took me a long time to get out of that, to remove myself. And it may not have been exactly that situation, but something like it. And now you have compassion for this world. You have love, compassion, and truth. And these are all contained within the throat chakra. Then you rise up into the next, once you have passed the lessons there, and now you are in the third phase of the mystical crucifixion. And this is the place of ideas. This is the place of the causal. What you realize when you are in the causal, that every single thought you have has creative power to it. And you are responsible for every single thought you have. There's no stray thoughts. There's no casual thoughts. There's no being unmindful about what your thoughts. You think, oh my gosh, how could I ever manage all of that? Thoughts come so quickly, like lightning. They come, huh? And yet it is through grace we become very, very mindful. I must keep my thoughts upon God always, upon truth, upon compassion, upon light, because everything that I think is a creation. And if I think it, I'm giving power to it. And if I think something negative, if I think something limiting, if I think something awful, I am giving power to that. And I alone am responsible for that. So I must withdraw the power that I give to it. And it's very, very exacting. Very precise. And really, none of us would be able to transcend that if it were not for grace. Because it's that grace that is purity itself and will touch us and begin to transform our very thinking. We feel the bliss of God. We feel the love of God. We feel the light of God. And that begins to permeate all of our thoughts. And gradually there is nothing but that. Nothing but that. So you see, this is the journey that we take. It's a tremendous thing. And it's the most worthwhile journey you'll ever take, because when you come out of it, you are completely freed. You are completely freed. So, and when the human ego, the ego of the five senses, is crucified, that is still not the end. The risen Christ has come, but he still must ascend into the heaven of his own being. And there are still, after this tremendous experience, the 10 subtle qualities of the mind, which must be transformed and which must, in the end, be crucified. Because it is in the memory of all things that you did with regard to your senses that the trap still is there. It's still there, and so you try desperately to overcome this, and you could only do it through deep meditation and full concentration upon God. And finally, this Christ seed, which is first dropped in from the sacred cloister or claustrum under the brain, has gone behind the eyes and the nostrils and into the throat passage, has crossed over at the base of the skull and gone down the ganglion nervous system, to the conical-like cave or the manger, has made the circuit, has escaped from Egypt, which is the land of darkness in this symbolic sense, and returns to Galilee. And the word Galilee means circuit. And finally, and the circuit is his spine. And finally, as this Christ seed goes up to the point of Christ consciousness, the electrical current in the body meets the incoming current from the cosmos, coming in this way, and this is at the base of the skull back here. So this is the point, this is the mouth of God, where this Om or Amen vibration comes into the body. And the final crucifixion takes place, and you become a liberated and enlightened soul, able and qualified to do the work of God, to teach the truth. This is the truth. I can teach you this, I can tell you this with authority, because I was one who loved God so much that I not only was willing, but did give my life for him. And I came back of my own volition through all of these experiences to give the truth, because at that moment I felt that all the children in the world, all the people of the world, were my children. And I had to teach them the truth of my own experience, and not I, but God within me, because this wasn't anything I imagined. I'd never heard of such a thing. I'd never read about such a thing. But it was God himself who lifted me up and put me through these experiences so that I could teach the truth of the scriptures. And so we are the recipients of this truth. We are the recipients of it. And what we do with it is up to each and every one of us. We can walk out the door and completely forget everything that was being talked about today. Or we can take one essential aspect of what was said, and we can put it to work in our lives so that we begin to change our lives, and that this grace comes in and begins to change us. It is really up to us. But we have to ask ourselves, if not now, then when? When will we make that choice? When will we choose to take this great journey? Because eventually we have to make that choice. And there are many people who are angry at God. They're angry about the way he runs his universe. I don't like this world. I don't like what happens. I don't like my part in it. And with that anger, we're like a small child who decides to hold their breath until the parent gives in to them. But God's not going to give in to us. So how long can we hold our breath? How long do we withhold ourselves from that divine consciousness, which is all bliss, all love, all purity, all light? You see, we only harm ourselves. We only withhold from ourselves. We don't hurt God. God is beyond that. We only hurt ourselves. So if not now, then when? And this is the great question that we must ask ourselves. Will we really put these things to work? Will we dive deeper into meditation? Will we speak only the truth with love and compassion? Will we work to get rid of every thought that is not of the highest sort and dive deep into this eternal feeling of bliss and joy and go through this transformation? The choice is ours, and we actually make that choice each and every day, each and every moment. It's where we live our life. And so my thought for you, my prayer for you, my desire for you, is that you take this deep down and that you really go to work on yourself. You identify those places where you're not in harmony with this highest truth. And you sing to God. Do you love God? Love is the greatest attractive force in all of this creation. And when you love, say you love somebody in a human sense, you fall in love with somebody, you don't have to discipline yourself to think about that person. You cannot not think about that person. You want to be with them all the time. That's the attractive force of love. And when we have that divine love in us, that love of God in us, we only want to be with God. We only want to have that time with him. And he is universal, so there's no place that God is not. So wherever we are at, whatever we are doing, that presence can be with us. And as a result of that, it transforms us. So let us enter into the life with complete sincerity, total dedication, total love. And if we don't have that love, then pray for that love. There was a time in my life I didn't feel like I had any love at all. I didn't feel love for anybody, not my parents, not anyone. I didn't hate them. I didn't feel like I knew what love was at all. And here was Mother telling me I needed to love God. It was like hearing something in Greek. I didn't know it, but I knew that there must be something in there. So I started to pray to God. I said, God, you know me. I've got nothing. Got no feeling of love for you or anyone else. You must give it to me. You must give it to me. And that is when he started me on this road where I had this tremendous pain in my heart. That was the culmination. And when that broke through, I was in a sea of love. The air itself around me, all the trees, everything was imbued with this quality of love. And I felt like I was swimming in the sea of love. It was so far beyond anything I could have anticipated or known about. Not even a little bit. So remember, it's not just about learning a philosophy. It's just not hearing these things. It's going through the experience. That's what we must have. And it's what always drove me to this path. It was a path of experience, not vague philosophy, not learning a different language or going on an intellectual trip. Certainly the intellect can help us to refine our focus on thinking of God, loving God. But that ultimately it is these experiences themselves that transform us and teach us the truth. So that when you get it, it's not just an idea that you hold. It's such a powerful experience that it resonates through every cell of your being. And you know it, and you know that you know it. So we must strive for that level of realization, uncompromising. We go beyond the intellect. We go beyond any source of limitation at all until we are that living truth itself. Now, if you think that's just a fantasy, we have thousands of years of realized beings who say contrary. And I can tell you from my own experience, this is possible. This is a reality that is so much greater than any reality previously, it makes everything else pale into insignificance. Because it is so great, it is so powerful, it is so wonderful and beautiful that this world seems as a dream. So this is the truth. Let us sing a chant of Mother's that Amy Cannon put into music. And the words go, Lord, let my attention be forever fixed upon Thee. Let me love Thee, let me serve Thee, let me worship Thee alone, for Thou art all and all and all. Lord, let my attention be forever fixed upon Thee. Let me love Thee, let me serve Thee. Let me worship Thee alone. Thou art all and all in all. Lord, let my attention be forever fixed upon Thee. Let me love Thee, let me serve Thee, let me worship Thee alone. Thou art all and all in all. Lord, let my attention be forever fixed upon Thee. Let me love Thee, let me serve Thee, let me worship Thee alone. Thou art all and all. at all and all in all. Please pray with me. O Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, I feel the wonder and the beauty of Thy glorious presence in every part of my being. My heart is bursting with my love for Thee. I kneel in adoration at Thy feet and surrender myself to Thee. I feel the power of Thy perfection surging in every cell of my body. My mind and my intelligence are radiant with Thy healing light. My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss of my communion with Thee. I and my Father are one. Blessed Spirit, I am He. Bliss. Amen. Pranams, I bow to the light within you. Realize the great light of being that resides within you. Do not be fooled by your little humanness, but know that the great God resides within you, ever has and ever will, and is waiting to awaken. Awaken into your consciousness. Om, Amen. Food for the soul and spirit. I think we also had some food for the body, so join us.